Welcome to Cannabis Business Minds Podcast with your host, Simone Samaluka-Radzins. Join me where I'll take you inside the ins and outs of this brand new and exciting business called cannabis. Connect with me on Calligia.com and follow us on social media as well. And here's today's show.
In the market. 8 years is my sister. I moved out to Colorado 8 years ago in 2010.
What? Mm-hmm. So you moved out. Okay. So everybody, we're talking to Liz, one of my most favorite people. Whenever I come up to Portland, I'm like, I have to see you. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. You're welcome. And it's so funny because we're talking today about sales. We're talking about connections, about being in the industry and kind of just this evolution. And it's so funny. I met you at a networking event.
Exactly. And we were talking about tax stuff, remember?
Oh,
and it was like talking about tracking and traceability and like, basically, I think it was, actually, I do remember, it was equating a seed to sale tracking thing to like a cable provider.
Yes.
That's where we started talking.
A cable provider. And then we also, I think we talked about it as cars.
Yes.
I remember you were like, one seed to sale is like a Cadillac and the other one is like a, what?
I don't
like a Ford,
Ford Fusion. Yeah, you were like, some people are Ford people, and some people, and it's funny because not only seed to sale, that could be translated to like equipment or anything else. So it's
yes, totally. Sorry, I'm just shifting the computer, but yes. So I'm so happy to have you on. I mean, we've got 30 minutes to talk about so many things, and I think the best is just to talk about your story. So your story in cannabis, because. You know, so I've been asking a lot of my listeners, like, well, what do you want to hear more of? And everyone loves to hear people's stories and get some advice, right? And so you have such a strong sales background, and I wanted to talk about that. But we were talking before we got on this that maybe that's not your true calling, right? Yeah. And so I want to just go into kind of first, before we even start the sales, how did you end up in Portland? Like, what caused, like, to walk us through you 8 years ago and how you got to Portland, Oregon today as it relates to cannabis.
Yes. And it's funny because I do always say that I'm not a salesperson, but I end up talking about sales all the time. And I would say it's the same way that I grew up playing sports, and I was a basketball player for years, and I was a shooting guard, the number two guard. And I would always tell my coaches, I'm a non-shooting shooting guard. So I love the assist. Like, that's what I live for, but I don't want to be the point guard. And so it's my inability to kind of step up into these roles, I think, sometimes, and wanting to do it all. But sales is actually how we found ourselves in Portland. But cannabis, my sister actually, serendipitously enough, was starting a dispensary in Colorado, a medical store in 2010.
Okay.
And I had just graduated from college. I studied economics and Mandarin.
And Mandarin?
Yes. And that was actually, that's a whole nother story, but just really kind of understanding, you know, this global economy and how language relates to people and all these different things. So looking for patterns, but didn't know what I was going to do. Was in South Carolina and was, interested in what my sister was doing, which involved cannabis and music. She had a boyfriend at the time who was a producer and doing just a lot of cool shows and how all that culture mixed together. So I moved out to help her and ended up becoming her general manager of her dispensary. We were completely thrown into small town politics, had a moratorium on cultivation in the county that we lived in. So ended up doing a lot of local lobbying, finding out just how important and political so much of that is. Really, you know, a town of 5,000 people and 5 dispensaries was common, I would say, more common than you would think, and completely changing regulations and all sorts of different requirements. So that's how I kind of got thrown into that. She had some things change with the ownership of the company, and ended up staying in Salida for a little bit, but it was hilarious to be in this small town Colorado, forced to go to Denver quite a bit because we weren't able to grow in Colorado, or in Salida, so our grow was actually in Denver. So there was a lot of back and forth there, which people, I'm sure, in every state can relate to, the ridiculous things you will do. But ended up moving from there with my boyfriend at the time, now husband, and then former business partner, all of the things, to Asheville, North Carolina, because we were also really big craft beer nerds.
Yeah.
And we had spent some time there in college, so ended up moving back. and stayed kind of one foot in. We had done a lot of implementation of systems at my sister's store, so seed-to-sale tracking, accounting, inventory stuff, and so got to know a bunch of people in that space, and there was a huge need for data remediation and like inventory transfer when Colorado went medical to rec in 2014. Washington did at the same time, but a little bit smaller market. So we ended up just kind of staying in touch with our contacts and finding out that we were looking to do some stuff in Asheville, which is a hilarious town. We talk about,
what's it like?
It's kind of like a smaller Portland, and we talk about how everyone there, you're like, you can't have a job here because there's no jobs that would afford you to live this way. So clearly you must do remote things. So it's kind of like Portland in the sense that there seems to be a lot of like young retired people and you're very confused about it. So we were looking at other ways. I was kind of, you know, we were doing some consulting. I was working at an all-female gym, which was really cool. And I met a cool influence there, but so just finding ways to stay involved. And one of those being doing some data remediation and transfer on with Atlas clients. And yeah, so.
Can you talk, because I still want to hear this, but what you're saying, we all know you're an economist, history repeats itself.
Yeah.
Okay. And so like this, what you're saying, what you saw in Colorado, you saw this tradition from like this transition from medical to adult.
Yes.
Like, we're in Portland right now. I've been working a lot in California. Like, that's what these guys are about to experience.
There's a lot of trends, I think, that will repeat themselves.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, I love economics, and that's why, to fast forward in that, Oregon, we've got brought to Oregon after Asheville because Will and I had started this company, Green Delta Consulting, in Asheville. We're working remotely. Things were moving at a pace at that time where I could base myself somewhere and just show up where I needed to. But we thought, look, we don't have kids. We don't have plans to in the next 5 years, and we need to get back into a legally functioning market. So we moved to the West Coast, picked Oregon because Colorado, we already had been there. Yeah. California was too big at the time, too broad. Washington was a little too expensive. And we looked at Oregon. The timing for us was great because the regulated market started sales in October 2015. So we actually moved here on purpose September of 2015 to give ourselves a month to establish. We had been working from afar, but to get on the ground, we were still doing some dispensary implementation, seed to sale stuff. So getting that ready for that transition. And I think to answer your question, I totally think these markets, what people can do, you're going to have to put in the work, but if you can look at some of these past transitions and anticipate what could happen, these people are repeating markets. So regulators, as we talked about, are so siloed sometimes. They're getting their information from other markets. And it's really interesting to kind of see these patterns as they play out. But absolutely, it's, yeah, I mean, I really think that's how we that's how we found ourselves here, is we kind of looked at markets, we looked at patterns, and we projected, and we find ourselves here in Portland, and 3 years later, it's like the blink of an eye. So
gosh, well, because I'm thinking, we met right when you moved to Portland then.
Yeah.
Because it was at that Women Grow event, and I remember it was the first cannabis boot camp.
Yep.
You know, helped open up an office for accounting.
Yep.
And then, gosh, that's so funny. So it was 3 years ago. It was a very big time for a lot of people.
It was. And it's interesting you mentioned Women Grow. That's 100% how was an influence to move to Portland as well.
Wow.
The beginning of that year in 2015, I had actually started the Asheville chapter through a connection with my sister. So it's all very relationship-based.
Yeah.
Hot tip to my sister one more time. She totally hooked me up in that network of people, although she herself was not actively engaged. So she could have really shut me off from it, but literally brought me to the door and said, we can't do this together, but you're going to love this. And I think that was so big of her. And it's why I really like to connect people a lot, even though I know I'm not necessarily going to be involved. It's like, look, you would love this person. I would love to hang out with you guys together, but I know that's not where this is going to go. So you really have to be, you have to be willing to like see something succeed that you're not ever going to be a part of, or that you're not ever going to be able to, and like understand what that means, I think. And so, yeah, Amanda brought me, my sister, to that, and I really ran with it, and I think was super supported. Had a lot of good memories with some of those people over the past 3 years. And just like you said, it was like this fast track.
Yeah.
But I had met Leah Maurer and Sarah Batterby, who were the two women that started the Portland chapter, at a retreat, the first Women Grow retreat they ever did. And they got so much shit for it, and it was so funny because not in a bad way. It was just so funny because it wasn't extravagant at all, but again, regulations in Colorado for us to have a private space to consume required that we had to rent out an entire resort at the time. So it was expensive, but they put, I will give kudos to them forever for this. It was amazing. I don't know that everybody remembers this, but they literally on the first day sat us down and said, here's our budget for this. So you guys can literally see where the money went because we know that we want to know.
Yeah.
And so I think that was a really cool thing to do. And I know that that organization has gotten a lot of flack over the last few years.
Yeah.
I will say at utmost respect to the fact that they really have stayed true to the mission of connecting. And I would say it opened my eyes to all the other organizations. Once I got out here to the Pacific Northwest and saw Women of Weed, Normal Women of Washington and Oregon, and all these other groups. And again, you mentioned that's how we met. Yeah. And I think that's been the really cool thing is, like, you know, not reinventing the wheel, but understanding, like, we can have all these small groups with special interests and then kind of like plug into the greater.
Right. And so, plug into the greater, because, you know, offline we were talking about this is just the biggest, not issue, but the biggest thing that I'm seeing in the cannabis space right now, but I saw it 3 years ago. I think you must have seen it 3 years ago, is these silos.
Yes.
And so what are your thoughts on ways that we can better get all those groups to come talk together? And this is kind of segueing into kind of your networking and building in kind of communities. Like, what do you think?
So interestingly enough, it's an awesome segue to one of the companies that I used to work for here in Portland. And I love what they do with data visualizations, Phylos Bioscience. So they're a genetics company here in Portland. Was working in a couple of regions for them to work with people for plant sex testing and genetics testing. But they have this really cool thing called the Phylos Galaxy. And it's a data visualization of all of the strains that they've ever done a genetic report on, a genotype report. And there's about 4,000 strains. And if you looked at it 3 years ago, a company is about 4 years old, it was much smaller. And the network, it basically shows genetic relatedness in these lines and then the time, like it's a 3D model, so you can move it around.
Wow.
It's really great.
Oh, wow.
But I remember seeing it for the first time, and I know their CEO, Mogley Holmes, and know him through networking. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying, I explained the galaxy to people kind of like my network. So like, if you imagine this cluster of OG Kushes, you know, and again, they're all here, but it's on the same population. So it's really interesting to see, and I think he did a cool job at the one of the Oregon Cannabis Association events this year talking about the galaxy, and so many people thought it was this like genetics tree, you know, or like the phylogenetic tree, like this is the origins of cannabis, and same thing, you know, we look at people's connections and relationships and networks sometimes, and you're like, well, Simone must know this person because of this and this and this, and you make all these inferences, and it's like, actually, they sat next to each other at coffee and didn't even know who each other were. So you look at this, and so many people take and run with, like, well, look, this is the wrong thing, or it's the real this. And it's like, well, actually, if you look at it, it's a population map. Yeah. And so looking at all these things that coexist and never see each other, but, you know, are so secretive and, secretive and siloed and, I think it's this really cool thing. And I know you and I have spoken at length about the fact that people are in these silos.
Yeah.
And so you need to kind of have these like silo busters, right?
God, you're right. We need a silo buster.
Yeah. And it's so weird. Oh, it sounds like filibuster. But like, it's so weird because when you start to do that, people get nervous. And I find myself all the time being like, and I constantly, do you know so-and-so? Do you know so-and-so? And it's how I reference.
Yeah.
And real subject matter experts that are so committed to what they're doing are like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And then they get scared because they're like, well, I should, because if that person's doing what I'm doing, and they get defensive. And it's funny, my husband's like that. And it's one of the ways we're very opposites. He has brilliant ideas and he sees somebody else that has an idea that's even just like it a little bit.
Yeah.
And he's like, damn it, somebody else did it. Yeah, competition. Mm-hmm. Somebody else is doing the same thing I'm doing. And I'm like, wait, I see that in the totally different light of like, that's validating that this is a good idea and somebody else thinks it's worth doing.
Yeah.
And I want to find that person.
And you might have found a business partner.
Exactly. And just because you're doing the same thing does not mean that you should, you know, be business partners.
Yeah.
But like we talked about before, just not duplicating efforts.
Exactly. Well, because we were talking offline, which I'm like, I love these offline conversations to bring them online to the listeners, but there's this concept of really trying to almost, if you have an idea and you've got other people that are doing the idea, why not come to a mastermind? Why not come to some other form of gathering? Either figure out if you can build each other up, if you know you can support one another, because you know economically we're still fighting federal legalization here. Yeah. Right. And I think that's, I always think about the biggest competitor in the cannabis industry is nobody in the cannabis industry.
Exactly. Well, and that's, you know, it's interesting. You know, you talk about this, the network and the more holistic approach to not being so siloed. And it's like, I think about it quite often, and especially, you know, with the lot of interaction I get to do with like really amazing cultivators and just stewards of the land sometimes that are, it's so cool to be in this place where like those are people in your community and like genuinely you get to interact with them and learn from them. But look at the plant and what it does and how it presents. And, you know, you look at distillate and you look at these things that are isolated and you look at opioids and you look at these things that, you know, just have been segregated in this way. And it's like, well, okay, endocannabinoid system, people don't even know about it. You know, we were talking about offline as well, just how overprivileged we are in our access to information in our daily lives with cannabis. And, you know, we take it for granted sometimes, I think, but just that, like, just the entourage effect of all of it, you know, it's not just effective in cannabis as medicine or in cannabis as whatever we do. It's so true in everything. And, you know, that's the funny thing is like minds do tend to come together sometimes, but you have to remember that, like, if everybody in the room's agreeing, like,
we are not in the right room.
Exactly. Like, it's like, oh yeah, this is a great idea. Let's build each other up on it. And it's like, crap, like we're missing something.
Right.
So,
yeah. When you talk to people, because that's what I've noticed, it's like, I almost feel like I'm in the wrong room half the time. Like I, you know, we ran into each other, what, last week or the week before at that cannabis event in Portland. I thought it was very innovative. Yeah. I thought it was interesting. And I'm curious what your thoughts are, because there's so many startups wanting to get into the cannabis space in Oregon.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, well, I didn't think many people were getting into cannabis in Oregon. I thought people were not doing as well. I was surprised to see so many new brands like trying to enter. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that, you know, it's, as we talked about, looking at other markets, fairly predictable, especially with, and that's where my economics mind went years ago when Oregon was like, okay, no barriers to entry, essentially. Yeah. This is like a totally free market. This is just like, I always joked back when I was like, I want to open the, you know, the economics dispensary. Like it'll be called the invisible hand. We'll just let the market set prices and dictate everything. It'll be great. Like,
oh my God, could you imagine?
It'd be like the nerdiest thing ever. People would probably love it. But no, just really, I'm not surprised by it, but I think what we were both kind of noticing, we were like, it wasn't like, wow, everyone's new here. It was almost like everyone here knows each other and we don't know anyone. And that's so weird because typically we do know people. And it was, I think inside of Oregon and outside of Oregon have such a different mentality, where inside of Oregon, we're sitting here going, oh no, we're drowning. You know, nationally we're getting some attention with the overproduction, but you're looking at really smart, I think, strategic people and attorneys and counselors and consultants that are helping people in multi-state markets that are saying you have to get a foot in Oregon right now.
Oh.
Honestly, because think about it, because it's the easiest license you're going to get.
Yeah.
You know, look at the money Canada's pouring in there. Maybe you can get swooped up in an acquisition.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think that if somebody paid me money right now to stay strategically, not morally, you know, but like from an economics perspective, where is this going to go?
Yeah.
Because although the price is bottoming out here, I saw a really interesting article a few weeks ago that said, look at Colorado's launch of legalization, look at Washington's, look at Oregon's.
Yeah.
They all took different approaches, but everybody's experiencing bottoming out prices.
Yeah.
So how can that be avoided in California? How can it be avoided in other places? And
Vegas isn't avoiding it. I mean, like, Vegas hit a rock bottom.
Yeah. Well, and then, that had to do with distribution because they ran out of product.
So that's this. It's like, it's such a global supply chain, or it's a state supply chain issue.
And here's the thing is we're going to take all of these resources to figure out an issue that's going to be, to your point, somebody else sitting there with global logistics already dialed, being like,
we're not thinking globally.
Yeah, like, this isn't, why the hell would you do this, you know?
Right. Well, and that's an interesting thing. I think I'm inviting you on to the next show because I want to ask you a few questions just about sales.
Yeah.
And I want to talk to you next time I'm here about, if you want, about global economics. Because that's like one of the very interesting things that what are your thoughts on that?
So two quick answers. First, I studied economics in college, and I actually reached out to my old college economics professors, one of whom was a game theory professor from Brazil who used to teach global economics as well.
Awesome.
Yeah. Super fun shit. But randomly enough, I was in Vancouver, Canada, about a month and a half ago at the ICBC conference.
Yeah.
Speaking on behalf of Phylos on a genetics panel, which was fantastic. And I'm in the lobby and I run into my old economics professor, a different one, who's speaking at the International Economics Convention that's happening at the same hotel, and they're not talking to each other. And like, that's what I always get, where it's like there's like a cannabis conference next to a technology conference next to a, and you're like, how? Next to an addiction conference, and you're like, these are all the same shit.
Let's all talk together.
Yeah, but to circle back and answer that question about global economics, I think it's super interesting because there are people talking about, I mean, look at all the CBD coming from China and global supply chain, and as countries legalize and we're falling behind, what does that look like?
Yeah.
I had such cool insight into that working with Phylos because of the seed thing. I mean, genetics and seeds and how that has just permeated through the entire globe, and when you can literally look at like the ethnobotany of how the plant has traveled and how seeds have been passed as currency, and you look at this, and it's so cool to think about. But
it's so amazing because have you guys had this conversation with the Phylos team or just with anybody that you know? Where's the oldest strain from? Because you've heard like China 6,000.
Right. Oh, there are seeds. And that's the crazy thing is because Phylos is doing this amazing thing and working, to map so much of that, but it's not an origins map, you know, it is this population map. So there has been a lot of, you know, conversation and not just at Phylos, with a lot of really cool companies globally, really, that are looking at this. But more so than anything, it's, I think the nature of so much of that is if somebody did have something that old, there's a guy, Don Warshafter, I'm sorry if I pronounced that last name wrong, who's out of Ohio, who has the Cannabis Museum, that's really incredible. And they shared a lot of samples with Phylos back when they started their project with the American Museum of Natural History and did that initial collection effort. So,
I got to reach out to him. I didn't even know there was a cannabis museum, let alone in Ohio.
Yeah, and they actually bring it up to HempFest. So,
really?
I believe so.
Okay.
So.
I did not. Well, and then on the next show, we'll have to get you to talk about HempFest a little bit. And so, what are you speaking about in
You know, I am whittling that down, but really everything all-encompassing really of just what we've been talking about, which is just how do you make sure that your message is reaching your audience, which is funny because I've been sitting there being like, okay, I get 5 minutes on stage to this huge audience, and the thing that I keep thinking of is if I passed myself, would I stop and listen? You know,
that's a very good way, though, when you're presenting, to think about what's your message.
Yeah, and you know, I could talk about so many things, but again, I think it's just remembering to tell people to use your voice in today's everything that's going on right now. You know, I think we make a lot of assumptions that people are, I don't know, just on the same page as us, and we have to work together, but make sure that you're not working alongside somebody for a reason that, I don't know. It's again, clearly I'm really, know what I'm going to say tomorrow, but no, I think just encouraging people to find their communities and just really continue to really find what you're passionate about. Because I think, again, I've talked to so many people recently who are burnt out and working in cannabis, and you're like,
I'm one of them.
Yeah.
I'm one of them. Yeah, what are you talking about? You're so blind.
And then you talk to other people who are like, you work in weed. And it's like,
but it's different. And I think one of my first presentations in 2015, and I want to go back to it. It was like, will the next set of leadership in the cannabis industry be the same as our founders?
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, I don't know, because I feel like it's changing. I feel like it's changing so much. Like, I notice I'm working like almost like 80 hours a week. And I'm like, wait, I left my old job because I was doing that, right? And so I'm curious, do you think it's a leadership thing? Do you think it's just that this market is so, it's changing so much? What are your thoughts on why there's this burnout? Because a lot of us came doing the same exact thing.
I think that, you know, it is a result of leadership, and a lot of the same things being carried over, and we see that influence of capital as well. And I think that just like we've seen women in leadership, those numbers go down pretty significantly, which I don't think that's a direct correlation, like, oh, better leadership because it's women. But in that sense, I think that so much more of the old is just creeping in way faster, and it's going to be much harder for a company to say, this is how we do things, because you're looking at the bottom line. You're looking at what you can cut because of all this competition. How do you survive so that you actually can enact your mission? I think, and total shout out to them, Yerba Buena and Laura Day over there does such a good job. And she's done so many good presentations on, you don't build a company in a way to say, well, when we hit these numbers, then we can think about getting our employees health insurance. You know, build those things and those, and again, hat tip to them and the team they've built and what she's been able to do, but you build those things in from the beginning and they've been able to do that really successfully. I think there's a lot of companies that really are not highlighted, that really take the time to do that. And that's going to be the difference, is really sticking to this commitment of, you know, again, we've talked about your, some of your clients down in SoCal where it's like, do you know what you could do with that checkbook? Like instead, like, come on, you know, and just really being okay with being uncomfortable. And like we've said, I'm not in the right room. We're not having the right conversation, and I need to find it because it's out there. And I think that's what gets me. I feel it in my gut, and I'm like, we talked about that too. How am I going to use this relationship, or how am I going to, what conversation am I going to start? What idea am I going to spark? Because this could go so many ways.
How am I going to do today something very meaningful, impactful with whoever I'm talking to, whoever, whatever person that is in the room, how it relates to my business.
Oh yeah.
Ah, totally. Are you ready for the speed round?
Yes.
All right. Okay. Everyone always sounds so nervous. I feel like I need to like make it not sound so nervous, nerve wracking, but tell me, if you could imagine yourself in 1 year, where do you picture yourself?
I think I will still be in the Pacific Northwest. I really would picture myself ideally working with national brands or companies with capital to identify brands that would be successful nationally in multiple markets. So that's, I kind of feel
highly sought after.
I kind of really feel like I'll be in a position to bridge some more gaps in another year.
Oh, excellent. This has been one of my main themes for like 2018 and I think 2019 as well. What's the future of cannabis?
I think the future of cannabis is straying away from THC. And that I think really will come to fruition in a multitude of different products, looking at cannabis so much more as a wellness product. You know, the future is really integrating this into our daily lives and, you know, going home and seeing your parents or grandparents and having them remind you, you know, did you take your hemp supplement or something like that? So I think normalization, the bottom line, is going to be the future.
Oh, yes. I can't wait. What's one piece of sales advice you can give our listeners?
Sales advice for the listeners. I would say with cannabis, please remember that the relationships you have before going into a sales role, you know, could change afterwards. That wasn't super eloquently said, but I think just remember, that'll be the speed round answer that you're looking for is context and contacts.
Oh, that's perfect. Okay, that's perfect. You know, context and contacts.
Yeah, and please remember to differentiate or use those in conjunction, because there are so many times where, you know, I could say, hey, I know Simone. And if I reached out, you would be like, absolutely. You're like, what the hell are you talking about?
No, that's a really great piece of advice. All right, Liz, thank you so much for joining Cannabis Business Minds.
Thank you, Simone. Wonderful.
Thank you.